Now today, we come to the third stage or the third aspect of the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path, and that is right speech. Samyak Vacha. Now today, unlike on previous occasions, we have no difficulty of translation. There's no ambiguity, no nuance to be rendered with some difficulty into English. Vacha means simply speech or utterance in a quite literal sense. And as in the case of the previous, and as will be the case with the succeeding stages of the path, samyak means not just right, as it's usually translated, as opposed to wrong. It means that which is whole, that which is complete, that which is integral, fully developed, perfect. So we shall therefore speak of samyak vacha in English, not just as right speech, but as perfect speech. This is what it really is. This is what it really means. And it is very significant, we may say, if we think about it, that this speech, perfect speech, is regarded as, is treated as, an independent stage or independent aspect of the Eightfold Path. One might well have thought, well, speech isn't so very important. It's a sort of action. Why not include it under right action or perfect action, which comes next? But no. In the Buddha's teaching and in the Eightfold Path, right speech or perfect speech gets a whole step, a whole stage, a whole aspect of the spiritual life to itself. And this indicates, in fact, the very great importance, the very great place which Buddhism does give to speech in general, and especially to perfect speech. Not only is perfect speech the third step or aspect of the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path, but abstention from its opposite, false or imperfect speech, constitutes the fourth out of the five precepts binding upon every lay Buddhist follower. So from little things of this sort, we can understand the very great importance, the very great significance that attaches to speech, to perfect speech especially, in the Buddha's teaching. After all, if we reflect upon it, as our chairman remarked, speaking, talking, communicating is something which we do, which in a sense we have to do all the time. You may take up meditation, or you may not, as you wish. But when it comes to speech, you've hardly any choice. Whether you like it or whether you don't like it, you've got to speak, you've got to talk, you've got to communicate. You can't always be silent, even if you want to. And most of us, anyway, don't want to be silent. Not very much of the time, anyhow. So it's inevitable that some consideration should be given to this whole question of speech in any complete systematic program of spiritual life and training and culture. Speech also has to be brought within the purview, within the influence, even under the control of the spiritual life. So therefore, speech must be considered. It must be given a place. It's even more interesting perhaps to observe that in Buddhism there's a threefold classification of man. In the West we have a classification into body and mind, sometimes as in St. Paul's epistles into body, soul and spirit. But in Buddhism what do we find? We find a threefold classification into body, speech and mind. And this is surely very significant indeed. It's one of those little things which are so common, in a sense so ordinary, that we pass them over. Throughout Buddhist literature we see references to body, speech and mind. Body, speech and mind. But we usually pay no attention. But it does have, as I've said, a very great significance. It means that speech is given in Buddhism the same importance as mind, the same importance as body. These are a sort of co-equal trinity, body, speech and mind. After all, if we think about it, if we reflect, it is speech which distinguishes man from the beasts. We do know that birds utter cries, and we know that monkeys, some of them seem to have some sort of primitive speech, and apparently dolphins can communicate, but not quite as the human being. speech in the full, in the distinctive sense, seems to be, as far as we know, a prerogative of human beings, perhaps of angels, but we have knowledge only of human beings. So this is something which is special, something which is extraordinary, something which really does distinguish us, as it were, from the rest of the creation. If we think, if we reflect, we shall see, we shall realize how great a part of our culture depends directly or indirectly upon speech. Through speech, the mother educates the child. Through speech, the teacher educates the child. From books, which are, as it were, frozen, crystallized speech, we get information, we get knowledge, we may get even enlightenment. If all books were abolished, if all the literature of the world was burned, if it all went up in flames in one great conflagration, then what would we know? We would know hardly anything. We would know just a few facts of immediate sense observation and nothing more. So all our culture, our knowledge, our understanding, even our spiritual insight to a great extent is derived directly or indirectly from the word, from speech, and from utterance. So it is natural, even it's inevitable, that we should give as much consideration in the moral and in the spiritual life to speech as we do to thought and as we do to action. Most of you know there are three great phases of development of Buddhism: Hinayana, Mahayana, and Vajrayana. And in the Vajrayana, the adamantine path or way, the third of these three, the body, speech, and mind are associated, respectively, with three psychic centers, as we may call them, not attaching too much importance, by the way, to the word psychic. The body is associated with the head center, speech with the throat center, and the mind with the heart center. And this is why, just to digress a little, when we say salute the Buddha image or our teacher, very often we touch these in succession. We salute by joining our hands here, and then here, and then here. And this signifies that we salute with body, speech, and mind. In other words, with our whole being, completely, fully, without holding anything back. And there are many other correlations of these three, body, speech, and mind, for instance, with the three kayas or three personalities of the Buddha, but we're not going into all that this evening. At the moment, we're concerned just with one point, and that is with the fact that the throat center, representing speech, is in between the head and the heart centers. The head and the head center represents not only body, but also, in another set of correlations, the intellect or the understanding. And in the same way, the heart center, represents the feelings, the emotions. So you've got intellect here, you've got heart here. Speech at the throat center comes in between. So what does this mean? What does this indicate? It means that speech shares the nature of both. Speech gives expression both to the head and to the heart. With speech we communicate both our thoughts, coming from up here, and our feelings and our emotions, coming from down here. So as with ordinary speech, so also with perfect speech. Perfect speech represents or manifests simultaneously perfect vision, which corresponds to intellectual understanding without being identical with it, and perfect emotion, which corresponds on its own plane to our emotional life. Or, in other words, very briefly and very simply, with perfect speech, or in terms of perfect speech, we give expression both to wisdom and also to love and compassion. We'll see how this works out in detail in a moment. But we may say, just very broadly or very briefly, that perfect speech represents that transformation of the speech principle, or the principle of communication, a transformation by both perfect vision, the first step or stage of the path, and perfect emotion, the second step or second stage of the path. Now let us go a little more in detail into this and see what then is perfect speech.